Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David For on Friday, the 26th of March, recording at 8:55 p.m. And that's Greenwich Mean Time, although the last broadcast is we'll switch to British Summer Time on Sunday. Okay, now this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. So first, let's have a quick review of what's happened this week. In stock markets, quiet, but generally steady. And in long-dated government bonds, we've seen selling pressure. And that continued today, I see, in Europe, but the U.S. markets were a little bit firmer, and that's bond futures. The dollar has been generally strong, the euro particularly weak, but the euro has rebounded here today. It's back up at 134.08 against the dollar. And precious metals have been range-bound, with the palladium and particularly platinum a little bit softer. Gold had a decent day in here. It's back at $1,106.60 as I speak. Silver just 1692. The industrial metals have been steady for the most part. Lead has been weaker, although it was up a little bit today. The standout, though, has been nickel, which broke up out of a consolidation above a big trading range in here today. And the grain and bean complex, mostly soft, although soybeans rallied today. Okay, so what's going on here in terms of the big picture? Well, it's been another very good rally in that we have seen pretty consistent, steady, not spectacular, but steady gains over the last 7 weeks. Now, that has, of course, created a short-term overbought condition, but it created that, of course, earlier on in this rally. But one has to weigh that up against the many months of sideways ranging in what I felt, as you know all along, was a mean reversion in terms of the trend, the medium-term cyclical bull market trend, and the mean for that trend. To identify that, we use a 200-day moving average, as you know. So markets that had become so overextended on the upside back last September and October then saw, depending on the market, a gradual loss of upward momentum and a lot of sideways ranging as they worked their way towards that mean. And that was a process of smallish pullbacks, generally in the not more than the 10% range, and often less. And I think the U.S. was main indices were just under, just slightly less than the 10% figure on that during that correction. And it was also a period where the weaker markets that clearly were the focal point of economic concerns did much worse, and those are markets like Dubai and Greece, as you know. But subsequently, almost all of the world's stock markets have steadied quite a bit. One of the most interesting ones now, I think, is Japan, which has been a late runner here. If you have a look at the chart of the Japan Topics Index, and I've posted that today, it does look like it's on the verge of completing a very significant base formation. The Nikkei 225 is slightly stronger still, and that leading TSE2, that's the second section index of smaller companies, has been on one of its periodic, just persistent consecutive day moves, and of course to the upside this time. So that's favorable. It's been in an environment in which I have said that one should try to make hay while the sun shines. The problems that people had been worrying about, well, there are plenty of them, but there wasn't all that much that was all that new. The euro's problems caused some concerns, obviously. Widespread concern over sovereign debt levels, more on that in a moment. But interest rates have remained low, and the Fed has persisted in reassuring the market that they would stay low as long as they needed to be low. So it's been a fairly good environment here as far as global stock markets are concerned. And what is encouraging, I think, in terms of overall participation, is the Fuller Money themes have remained steady throughout this. There have been a number of new highs. Most of my top 10 have hit new highs, for instance, in the last two or three weeks. Some of those are new all-time highs. Now, well, that's encouraging. I emphasize that the performance has been flattered somewhat by the weakness that we've actually seen with sterling. But the point that I was going to make is that what is encouraging is to see the performance of some previous lagging stock markets. Now, this suggests that investors are very much interested in equities, and it also suggests that the risk appetite is picked up to the point, well, that they're willing to chance markets that were under a bit more of a cloud earlier on. The Middle Eastern stock markets have all been firmer recently. Some of the Eastern European stock markets have been very strong performers on this move overall. So what does all that mean? Well, it means several things. It's created a short-term overbought condition. The S&P 500 index had a very small key day reversal yesterday. And you do need to look at the chart very closely to make sure that that's what it did. So it's hardly a big deal in terms of global sentiment towards the U.S. stock market. Usually the most effective keys are the ones that are dramatic enough so that even the economist knows that something's changed. And that's a bit of a gratuitous slap on my part, isn't it? So I withdraw that, I'd strike that from the audio. But we are overextended. It would not be at all surprising if we saw a consolidation in here. And in a way, that's what we've been getting for the last couple of weeks for some markets, in that while the bias has still been upwards for the most part, it's been very gradual. And we have, it's just that markets have been holding their gains really quite well, and are not really getting more than a day or two at most on the downside, and usually a small little sort of pause before edging higher again. So we have been seeing some consolidation throughout this move, and I think one of the reasons why that's been the case is because there was so much support building during that mean reversion correction that we had seen, which ended with the February lows. So, as far as I'm concerned, this has very much reconfirmed the cyclical bull market for global equities, fueled by low interest rates and quite abundant liquidity. And I do think there's enough liquidity out there to fuel a further rise in stock markets. Yes, monetary policies are gradually changing. Central banks have either moved away from quantitative easing or are talking about moving away from quantitative easing. Some central banks have tightened credit conditions, notably China. Some central banks have raised short-term interest rates, notably Australia. But these rates are, for the most part, still low or on the lower side of average in an historical context. So that hardly accounts or hardly counts as a monetary squeeze. And what I would also point out again is that when the interest rate cycle does begin to tighten a little bit, it usually takes several rate increases, and particularly for an important market such as the USA, which has such a strong leash effect on the rest of the world's indices. It usually takes 3 or 4 rate hikes before that becomes a serious headwind for global stock markets. So it has been a benign environment, and it is likely to remain a benign environment for a little longer. I think among the OECD markets today, my favorite catch-up play would be Japan on the as a short to medium term trade. I don't think it's got the No, I was going to say, I'm not sure that it's got the staying power that we have with some of the for money theme emerging markets or developed country resources markets. But hey, if Japan gets it right, it could be really significant. And getting it right means getting the yen down, in my view. You get the yen down, you get the export earnings improving, that helps the economy, that strengthens the economy, that generates confidence throughout the economy, which then would be anticipated by the stock market, the rising stock market, if it persisted for more than a short to medium term, would build further confidence, and it becomes a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, will that happen? I don't know, but the chart patterns have the potential to produce something like that over the next year or so, and I think the process is actually starting of a bullish re-rating for Japan. The biggest concern, technically, among important markets has to be China, the China complex. So it includes the Hong Kong HSI index and the H share, that's the HSCEI code index. Now, there is a lot of hysterical copy, I feel, about Japan. Mind you, if the market falls through the floor, then it will prove to... then I will have been proved to have been complacent, and what I'm regarding now as hysterical copy will be lauded for its prescience. But I have a sort of a intuitive, ingrained mistrust for some of this copy, particularly when it comes from Western sources. I think there's a little bit of fear of China and wishful thinking, envy, that's all involved in this. I am more likely to be influenced by the reports, some of the heavyweight reports that I get from some of the gold, from some of the big institutions, not least Goldman Sachs, on China. And of course, I'm most heavily influenced by the charts, and that's my biggest concern, because China, having done very, very well following its bottom in October of 2008, has been a serial underperformer since it had that dramatic downside key reversal in late July last year. Now, it's quietly steady within a range, but I've written about it and talked about it more today, and that's the other leash effect. If China were to break down, go through its February low, incidentally, where it had a very clear upside key day reversal on the 3rd of February, but if we're to take that out, and that's not under pressure right now, but that would be a serious blow to sentiment in the region, and I think that would spread around to the resources players as well. My guess, and I have to also say it's my hope because I'm long China, and among other Fuller, most other Fuller Money themes, my feeling is that China has once again moved quickly enough and incrementally to pull back some of the liquidity that proved unnecessary because China never saw a recession. What the GDP growth dropped down to, what, 6%? Hardly a problem. But they were also concerned, given the collapse of the U.S. market and the consumer debt, and rightly concerned about the loss of that big export market. Not entirely, of course, but are we going to see U.S. consumers consuming Japanese goods with the same ravenous appetite that they showed during the leveraging up period? No, I don't think so, and I don't think anybody else does either, including the Chinese. So they've had a lot to worry about, and one of the first things was to prevent a head off a property bubble, and to redirect loans within their economy to revenue generating developmental projects, not just speculation in the property market. So I think they've probably pulled it off, but again, the charts will certainly tell us. But at the moment, mainland China, the lows are actually rising. Well, now I've got to move on from stock markets, except India. I should mention India is looking very steady here once again. Although I've been, as you know from the letters columns, if you've been, or the emails of the day that we have in common to the day, that I have not been thrilled to see the conspicuous consumption in my terms by the president and chief executive officer of Reliance Industries, India's biggest company, which is underperforming here overall. But it is in one of those very big ranging patterns, and if that breaks out to the upside, as I hope it will, and as indeed it could in this environment, then we probably would see a run to new all-time highs by the Sensex and the Nifty 50 index. It wouldn't take all that much to push them up there. So I think there's still opportunities here. And lastly, in terms of cash, I do feel to fuel a further stock market rally, I suspect that the most significant chunk of it would come from a partial lightening of the bond positions that so many investors are holding, both corporate bonds and U.S. Treasury bonds, and a move from bonds back towards equities to fuel an additional bull run. Okay, what about the long-dated government bonds? Well, in terms of the yields, the path of least resistance, I think, is upwards. I've said that all along. It was just a question of when. Quantitative easing has helped to delay that move because governments keep buying their own bonds, their own debt, and to keep those yields low. And to one of the main reasons they do that, of course, is to help to recapitalize the dreaded banking sector. And the banks have been borrowing from the government at near zero interest rates and leveraging up in the U.S. long-dated government bond market. Now, at some stage, that's going to end. The governments will signal that they're going to take rates up because they feel that banks are sufficiently recapitalized. Also, the rates could just go up because the so-called bond vigilantes, those are the other participants in there, just were not willing to hold treasuries because they felt that the potential was too low and the risks too high. For 10-year U.S. treasuries, watch the 4% levels I've mentioned on previous occasions. It's a psychological level. You've seen 10-year yields back away from that level on a number of occasions over the last year. But my feeling is that an orderly move above the 4% yield level on U.S. 10-year treasuries would be bullish for the stock market. But as that upward move progressed further, or as it does that, that it will eventually stop being a headwind, and at about the 5% to 5.5% level turn into a, I beg your pardon, stop being a tailwind for equities. Let me say that over again. When we do get a break above 4%, provided that it's orderly, I think that will continue to be a tailwind for stock markets. And that will continue for a while. But as we get closer to the 5%, 5.5% yield, then that will reverse around and become a headwind for equities. That's my hunch at this stage. It's based on observations of what's happened over the last few years and more. But again, we'll weigh it all up as and when it happens in terms of various performances of markets and in terms of market psychology. As for the U.S. dollar, it has continued to gain from the belief that it was less bad than the other reserve alternatives. And that has been true here recently, because if you want in-your-face problems that are not so old in terms of what we've known about them, such as the Greek situation and the other European economies that have been in trouble in terms of their sovereign debt, or where there have been big concerns about their sovereign debt, that has weighed heavily on the euro. People are extremely short of the euro, and I'm about to suggest a big if the combination of what the support program that the Euroland countries have cobbled together, plus the IMF loans, if that does more or less resolve the worst of the Greek situation. Obviously, Greece is going to be in very much of a deflationary environment for a very long time. But if it ceases to be a crisis, the way Ireland has ceased to be a crisis, and if, and another big if Portugal does not explode in terms of yields, then we're going to see a stronger euro. Now, I'm creating a possible scenario. Will it happen? Well, so much depends on psychology. The big fear or hope for those who are actually short the euro is that you have a domino effect, and that, okay, we put a safety net under Greece, but now Portugal is the target, and then Italy, and then Spain. You know, that's the sort of talk that's been in the marketplace. And if it doesn't look like that's happening, if these problems begin to settle down somewhat, then I think we would see the euro rebound as all those people who are short came out and hopefully moved on to the yen. I say hopefully because that's what Japan wants and needs, I feel, and many other people also feel, and also because I think the yen is an attractive short opportunity over the probably the short and certainly the medium term. And the US dollar is certainly no longer a cheap currency overall. Sterling's cheap currency, and I do feel that the pound is quite likely to do better, particularly following the election, particularly if we get on the 6th of May, it'll almost certainly be on the 6th of May, if we get a conservative government with a working majority, then I think we will see the euro on, I beg your pardon, the pound on firmer footing overall. Okay, what else to mention? Gold. Well, now gold has been a big underperformer here in the short term. It had its peak in early December. It's currently range bound, and I think the best explanation behind this is that one, gold had run ahead of itself. For a while there, people felt that gold was really the only game in town. And that's something I've mentioned on a number of occasions. Today, it's got plenty of rivals. Now, my view is that gold is the best long-term store of wealth, and is generally and increasingly regarded as such by the investment community. But if stock markets are hot, and stock markets have been very hot over the last seven weeks, and if there are other big trades out there, such as some of the currency trades that people have been participating in, it's not too difficult for them to overlook gold or to say lower their gold position somewhat. And the gold market has not been helped by all these stories flying around about the manipulation of the markets. They're always in the background and sometimes the foreground, and they're in the foreground more recently. And also there are the IMF sales. Now, has this cooked gold for the medium term? Possibly. Possibly. I think if we're going to, but not necessarily, and I've still got a not insubstantial long position there, both through shares and in the futures. Not as big in the futures as it has often been, but nonetheless not insubstantial for me. And partly because I think in this overall environment, we're more likely to see enough liquidity sloshing around the system to create some additional asset reflation. We're seeing it in stock markets. I wouldn't be at all surprised if the gold and other precious metals picked up again in the not too distant future. But on the charts, we still have gold ranging above its 200-day moving average. That's a plus. The recent underperformance is a minus, unless you are a long-term investor and say, well, now I can buy gold a little bit more cheaply. But for traders, for futures players, it's been a tricky, very tricky market. And what gold really does need to do is break above the $1,150 level and hold that gain. And then it will, the technical picture will look quite attractive once again. Will it do that? I don't know. I hope it does. I think it's maybe 60-40, 55-45 in favor. We'll see. And I think that's pretty much it right now. I suspect that we will not see a major run to the upside by crude oil in the short term, but again, we want to follow the charts, and it's ranging mostly range bound with a slight upward bias, so it wouldn't take much for crude oil to break out to the upside. That would worry me a little bit in terms of headwinds, but it wouldn't be a serious problem unless we were looking at the $100 level, something like that. I don't think that's in the short term future, and probably not in the medium term future. But again, I'll be guided by the chart action here as always. And I think I've probably gone on long enough and too far for some of you. So sorry about that. Have a great weekend. That's what I intend to do. Take in a splendid opera and see the new grandchild. Meanwhile, all the best to all of you.